Succession number 9955, reel number 13.
Mr. Calvert, reel 13. Mm. You were telling me about a corporal who took part in this demonstration.
Yes, he was in the same hut as me, and he said, "I want to borrow your jacket," because he had two stripes on his. So I had no option but to let him have it. And he took part in the demonstration and, of course, couldn't be recognised as an NCO. And he brought it back later on. Nothing more was said by, as far as I, because I wasn't in a position to say anything. He was the NCO.
And after this, they were taken away pretty well the same day then?
No, the following morning, early on, they were taken away. Before the camp had got moving, ready for another demonstration. They were taken away under armed guard and brought in under armed guard. Chaps, you know, rifle and bayonet. Military transport.
How long were you at this convalescent camp?
Before Christmas.
So you were wounded in September 25th. Yes. And in hospital into, I presume, October?
End of October, and then down there for a month, probably 5 weeks.
Into December, then?
Then you were, again, thoroughly checked over by the doctor, usual examinations. Then you were taken, sent on leave. You were given leave for, I think it was 7 days. Then you had to return to your battalion.
What happened on leave? You went back for 7 days. What reception did you get?
Well, just about the usual, I should think. People talking to you. There was more interest in the civil life at that time, owing to the rationing and all people being engaged in night and day war work. It made a very big hole in the population who were around during the day. They'd be asleep and working at night. And factories, clothing, they were producing cloth, you see, night and day, and equipment and steel in the various places.
How had the rest of your family been affected by all this? Were they involved in
it? Well, by that time, my father had been volunteered for the Derby scheme, and he was called up and was sent to join the Black Watch. And he later on went out to France, but owing to the hard life in the trenches, he became ill and was sent back home as a category C3 man, and was sent to guard German prisoners. Well, my sisters were all working.
Were they on war work or just in?
Yes, producing cloth.
Were they on these double shifts, I mean night work or?
No, it was owing to the raise, they didn't put them on nights, you see, at that time. You see, there were only just one or two were going to school. I think one were going to school and the others were just at the age when they could start work. So it was a quiet homecoming.
How about, you had a brother, didn't you?
Yes, well, he was in the butchering trade. Started as a butcher. So life was just a matter of going out to the cinema and going out with one or two of your frows that were available, and that was it.
Were you seen as a bit of a returning hero, the wounded soldier, or was it common by then?
It was so common. You see, that big attack. All streets in Bradford had lost either their husband or son or cousin or uncle or brother. There must have been thousands.
That the 1st of July?
Yes, 1st of July. That it was a regular day.
Had it had a big impact on Bradford then?
It had. Mm. People were very distressed over the loss.
Did they talk to you about it? I mean, you hadn't been in that attack, but you'd been on the Somme.
Mm, well, no, they seemed to keep it to themselves.
Now, after you leave, you went. You were posted to your battalion. Which battalion of the Grenadier Guards was that?
That was the 5th Reserve Battalion in Chelsea Barracks. And I arrived there and was sent to Number 3 Company. And in a few, we had the usual drilling. At that time, Chelsea Barracks had a lot of NCOs, warrant officers, some other regiments were sent there for training. And we used to have to form up on parade, and then they used to go between each rank, so that you had a guardsman, you had probably a sergeant major from another regiment, and then you have another guardsman, and you'd have a sergeant, and you used to have to take it in turn and drill us. Just to get them used to the drilling a company and platoon or whatever you had to be trained with.
How did they compare to your own NCOs?
Oh, they were quite willing to. The biggest part, you see, had never had anything to do with the army until about 1914 or 1915. And they'd been promoted quick because of the casualties. And a lot of things like drilling outside had got to be left alone, and trench warfare, and that was the main thing. And when they were sent back on promotion to be up the company sergeant major, they had to have this instruction to put them in the way of instructing others of lower rank. It was called the School of Instruction. And we had quite a number in week after week in the barracks, and the warrant officers, first class, all ranks, full sergeants upwards. We didn't get any regimental sergeant majors. They were, of course, would be probably fully qualified.
With all these NCOs being about, were you ever tempted to think of becoming an NCO at that time?
No, never. I went to school while I was in the barracks.
Tell me about that then.
I went to military school there for quite a time. And I sat for the second class certificate of education, and I passed that.
What sort of, you say you went to school, what lessons would you have, and how were they taught?
Well, you had a warrant officer who was from the educational. Apparently all barracks at one time used to have an educational class, and you were instructed in the usual three: writing, reading, arithmetic, English, map reading, and the usual thing to bring you up to a standard where you could write a letter and you could say something and you knew the meaning of it. It lasted quite a time.
Now, you'd been educated up to, you know.
Yes.
How did it compare with the education you received? Was it sort of the same stuff again, sort of reinforcement, or did it take you to new areas?
It was the same again, and then it increased as time went on, so that you became a little better with knowledge, which you really should have. And There were drummer boys as well there. In those days, there were maybe about 14 or 15 in the drums. And they were in a barrack room on their own. They used to be trained for drumming and bugle calls and all that. A lot of them were from St. Bernard's Home and various other establishments who had a leaning to join the army or navy, and they were sent.
How many soldiers and drummers would there be in a class?
Oh, about 15. About 15 of us.
And you'd have a warrant officer too?
Yes, he was very good too. I remember him as being outstanding.
What was outstanding about him? What?
The way he explained things. Nothing was too simple for him to put an explanation to it. Of course, there was a big blackboard and he used to write on it, and you sat at a desk on your own and you had paper and pencil and took notes, and it was in the afternoon.
About how long a day?
1 hour.
And was it daily?
More or less daily, 1 hour.
How did you get picked to go on this, or did you apply to go on it?
Well, Sergeant Major said to me, he said, look, you're only 17. He said, why don't you go to the educational class?
I'll come back to the bit about him saying you're only 17. We'll stick to the educational class.
Yeah.
That was what started it, though, you being underage.
Yes.
If you'd been 19 or 20, you wouldn't have been sent along, would you?
They wouldn't have bothered. But, you see, they were trying to help me to gain knowledge and pass these certificates, which meant then you could be eligible for probably up to the rank of a sergeant major without any trouble in those days.
Now, you did the second class. What about the first or the third?
He told me I didn't need the third. Concentrate on the second, which I did.
What was the exam like at the end of it to get this certificate?
I think it was similar to a school exam, generally. Write an essay, see if your grammar was up to the mark, and spelling, arithmetic. And then I think a little on map reading. So that if you were in open country, you could more or less distinguish features and draw a rough sketch of it. It wasn't too difficult.
So you passed that all right?
Yes, no trouble.
Did you set about doing your first class one, or was that...?
No, at that time, I thought I wouldn't bother. I left it. I thought, well, I've got the second, that was sufficient for the time being, and think about the other one later on.
Now, you'd joined the 5th Battalion at Chelsea. Had you joined them in December, or had it drifted into January 1917?
Just at the end of December 1916.
Now, how did they find out? The Sergeant Major said you're 17. Obviously, they'd found out about your age. How did that all come about?
Well, my father had written and sent my birth certificate to the regimental headquarters and told them he didn't think it was just the thing for me to be sent on active service again until I was the required age.
What had made him do that? Because he could have done that at any
time. Because he had already been out in the trenches, I think, at that time. I think he'd gone out and had seen something what it was and thought I shouldn't go through it again.
So it wasn't because you'd been wounded?
No. No, they didn't know my age, only when it was correct age until they got their birth certificate.
I mean, your father hadn't done it because you were wounded?
No, I think he'd seen conditions. Probably my mother as well might have persuaded him.
What happened when you... What happened? I mean, they got the certificate, so what did they do? They call you in?
No. No, nothing was said to me whatsoever, but they must have known, because name was put down not available for draft, you see, on your record in the company office. So the sergeant major, of course, would know. And
that's why I suggested to you.
Yes, he said it wouldn't do me any harm.
But they didn't. You didn't get told off or disciplined at all for another offence on adjoining.
No, I'd already been dealt with for that at Caterham.
So this wasn't seen as an additional offence. It was just seen
No. I'd done whatever was wanted. I hadn't shown any sign of cowardice or anything like that. So.
How did you feel about not being available for draft? I mean, you ended up staying in England for a year, didn't you?
I wanted to go out. I'd like to have gone out again. Because all it consisted of in the barracks was guard mounting, drilling, route march, and fatigues, peeling potatoes and all that sort of thing, and it got a bit monotonous.
Now, we dealt quite in detail with life in barracks with the guards before you went out, so to speak. Were there any differences in the way that you lived in the battalion this second time round in 1917?
None whatever. It was the same routine. Food wasn't as good, it had deteriorated, and things generally were rather... not as happy-go-lucky, because the biggest part of them had been out and been wounded and returned, and then we were getting a lot of people who were being called up. They weren't quite enthusiastic about it.
How did these, they were conscripts, and how did they compare with the chaps you'd been trained with? Were they as good material?
Yes, I should think they were as good material after they'd had a good grounding. Then.
What do you mean by a good grounding?
Good drilling and disciplined and all that, and make the most of their appearance and constantly head up, chin in, arms front to rear, chest out and all that, you know, and get your knees up and... Yes, it carried on just the same. There was no reduction in discipline or anything.
So you think that even though they were conscripts, by the time they'd been through the guards' mill, so to speak, they came out as good as anybody else?
Yes, I'm sure they did.
What do you think about them before they'd gone through the guards' drill, though? Were they as good material then? Were they as good a quality a man? Or?
Well, you see, a lot of them were married and they'd been in occupations reserved and they were beginning to... sort out things, and I think they resented having to leave the family to go and serve. But it soon left them when they got in a barrack room with the other chaps, and they were generally mixed in, and nobody questioned them whether they'd been called up or what. But the atmosphere was never hostile or anything like that to them. Of course, it was a completely new army, wasn't it, in 1917? The old volunteer army, more or less, had been smashed up in 1916. Those who were the most enthusiastic, of course, had gone.
What did you think of the news from France? Did you keep in touch with your old battalion at all?
Yes, you could get to know chaps coming back who'd been wounded and returned home and joined the battalion, and some were still receiving treatment in Millbank Military Hospital for being shot in the arm or somewhere, and they're having to go there for a massage and various to get the full. They've been discharged out of hospital sooner than what they should have done to make room for the ever-increasing casualties.
So although you hadn't been rushed, some people were being...
They were being, at that time, I think they were being rushed, and a lot of people who were not A1 were being classed as A1.
Now, is this... This is later than when... This is in 1917 that was happening, more than
yes,
the time when you...
going towards the end of 1917. Also, I was in the barrack one day in the afternoon when there was that big raid by a German aircraft, daylight raid on London. I saw those aircraft in the distance. We went to the top of the barrack, could see right over. That was...
What were they doing?
Dropping a few bombs and off. It was one of the biggest shocks I think London has ever had. Daylight raid, and with no aircraft to intercept them, apparently. They just came, dropped a few bombs and were back. And they flew along the Thames, I believe. And I suppose a lot of people didn't take too much notice of them, thought they were his own aircraft. We had concerts, of course, in the barrack room. It was a dining room, but they converted it into a lecture and concert. The officers used to bring people in and used to have concert parties.
These were outside concert parties?
Yes, used to bring their friends in. The officers had contacts and used to bring people in and you'd have a nice concert.
What sort of band were they?
They weren't a band, they were good pianists and singers, and they'd sing some of the old well-known songs, and everybody could join in if you wished. And tell a few jokes and pass a couple of hours on.
Do you have any other recreations?
There was a library. Then there was a dry canteen and a wet canteen.
You were still more interested in the dry canteen?
Yeah, there was Housey Housey.
Did you play there?
No. No, you couldn't go wrong. I mean, there was only one turned up out of six.
That's Crown and Anchor, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, did you play bingo, Housey Housey?
No, because we always thought there could be a twist in that. They seemed to be flush with money, those who always ran it. Then there was various other... You're fully employed, 6 o'clock Reveille and 6:45 parade, inspected, then... Get the. They need to go and collect the breakfast from the cookhouse, and then you'd have a meal at the long tables. There could be anything up to 35, 38 in a barrack room designed for 22. And.
That overcrowding lead to any tension? No.
No. Everybody looked upon it as something what couldn't be helped. No, it seemed to be quite comfortable. There's always plenty of joking going off and helping one another out if they were rushed for a mounting guard and give them an hand to get the equipment properly cleaned. And
you were still doing the guards we discussed beforehand then? I mean,
yes, Buckingham Palace, Friary Court, that's where the Queen Mother lived in Clarence House, there was that. And there was a magazine guard, there was barrack guard, then there were barrack picket, then there was the officers' mess picket. There were plenty of guard.
What did
duty.
You do on the officers' mess picket? I don't think we discussed that one.
Well, you was at the gate, and you only allowed in officers. No one else was allowed in. I suppose it was necessary to have someone, otherwise you might have had anybody just walking in. That was towards Sloane Square, end of the barracks, where the officers' mess was. Of course, it was fully occupied by the officers. You see, they were there on reserve and parading with the battalion and taking part in all these various events which were taking place. It was a...
What condition would the officers be when they came out of the mess? Did they drink much?
I never saw anybody the worse for drink. Of course, they'd have to go to bed and you couldn't see then. No, always on parade. But the biggest part of the barrack life was conducted by bugle call. They were the defaulters' call. But you started with Reveille, call to the cookhouse, then call for parade. Quarter of an hour call, Then you got 5 minutes call for the officers to be on parade. Defaulters call. Then there was a call for alarm. Everybody assemble on the barrack. There were all sorts of bugle calls, but I think they've done away with them now into objection by the local people. Don't like it. So of course they've had to find another way. There was a good church in the barracks too. Very nice service you could go to there on a Sunday. And as far as I knew, there was always something taking place. The band had come up once or twice a week and give you a concert, play some music for about an hour, and they tried to make you interested in things apart from being a serving soldier.
Did you have any lectures? You mentioned lectures, that this room was made into a concert hall lecture theatre.
Yes. Well, it was used mainly by the instructors for the NCOs they were instructing. It was used mainly for that purpose.
What about training? Did you get any more training other than drill?
No.
None at all?
No.
Why was that, do you think? Because they were taking drafts from the...
Well, you see, biggest part, and I should think more were being out than those who hadn't.
But what about the conscripts? Weren't they getting their...
They get their training in the barrack room, quite a lot of it, by listening. And then they got a further detail when you got to Le Havre, where you went up onto the training ground and had another session there, everybody.
So, but there was no training in rifle shooting or bayonet drill or anything like that?
They'd have got that. They'd have got that probably at Caterham. Or they could have gone to the ranges further down the Thames. I forget, Purfleet, I think it was. There was a big range there at Purfleet. And then they'd get some more training down at the base camp.
So there was no
training. Then they'd get some more at the battalion.
There was no training in anything new then that might be coming out?
No, the main training was discipline. Was to make sure you could rely on, one could rely on the other.
What about yourself? What was your position? You were an old soldier, even though you were only 17. Did people used to ask you what it was like, the ones who had
been
out?
Yes, used to. What was it like, and could you pass any ideas on to them and all that?
What sort of thing would you say?
Well, if you're on sentry looking at the German trenches at night time, don't move unless you're forced, because you had patrols out watching and listening. I think they had English speaking, they used to come and listen to conversation, you know. Like we sent people out on the same errand. But there was a lot of training then for that sort of thing, patrolling.
But not in England, not while it was the 5th?
No. No, we got that later on. A lot of new ideas had cropped up over what to do on patrolling and listening posts and various things which had developed over the...
That's year. One, but you didn't have listening posts in 1916, did you? Or did you?
I think they had them. And they had what they called it a SAP. It used to be run out in... just enough to crawl on. And you wouldn't throw the dirt out, probably. You'd have a place then at the end where there'd be a corporal or two or three of you. You could go in and stop there. You wouldn't be too far from the German wire. And you were there during the daytime, listening, watching. And of course, if you were, anything took place, you could get back like lightning. Only about 50 or 60 yards out, not too far. But it was an advance warning.
They did that in the St. Julian sector, did they?
No. No, it came later on in the other areas, I think.
In the Somme?
Yes, the Somme area. It was.
Did you ever have to do that advance duty?
No. No, I went out on patrol once or twice, but I never got into that, what you call, that developed 1918 more than anything else, I think, when they were, had all these isolated posts.
But it was just starting.
It was beginning to develop after studying, I suppose, the German methods. Without any doubt, the German was the king of trench warfare.